Hello, and welcome to the Night Crew Duty Log. I'm Peter C. Haywood, the creator of Night Crew. I have exciting news for you. Our Kickstarter launched today. That's right. If you go to the link in the description, you can check out our Kickstarter and help us make more Night Crew, which we very much want to do. I love this show. I love the people I've worked with. I'm really excited, so hit up that link and check it out. Today's Duty Log interview is with Debbie Derryberry, and it is truly fascinating. She dives into the world of voice acting, how she got into it, how the industry has changed, how the process works. It's a really, really interesting interview from start to finish, and not just because she says lovely things about me. Hope you enjoy.
What's up, my friends? Welcome to the Night Crew Interviews, affectionately known as the Night Crew Duty Log. My name is Gabe, and today I'm talking to Debbie Derryberry, the voice of Mother, the ship's computer. Debbie, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Gabe. So glad to be here. Love being a part of the Night Crew team and on the Duty Log.
Absolutely. I'm really, really excited to chat with you. I was going through your IMDb credit list a little while ago, and it is just an incredible list. You're the voice of Jimmy Neutron. You're in F is for Family, Doc McStuffins, Diablo 3, God of War, Toy Story 2, and over 300 other projects. Debbie, how in the world do you have time to do all these things?
You know, those are accumulated, I'm a voice artist, over decades, and I sort of do voiceover all day, every day. It's what I love. It's what I do in addition to singing. But yeah, it amazes me too. I'm like, really? How did I do that many things? But they just accumulate. You know, if you like look at the socks in my drawer, there's a lot of them.
Voice acting is like collecting socks. I got it. That makes a lot of sense. Tell me how in the world you got into voice acting, because I mean, I feel like now with the internet, there's so many cool opportunities and people are learning about these cool jobs and things that you could do that maybe you never heard of. They didn't show up in your guidance counselor list, but you got into this a while back. So tell me about your genesis into getting into the industry.
It's pretty normal. It's a real normal flow chart. I was a pre-med at UCLA, and then I moved to Nashville to pursue country singing and ended up back in LA doing voiceover.
The natural path.
Duh. There's a lot of details in there. Mostly the undercurrent is that I've always loved to sing, write songs, play guitar, do harmonies. But when I moved to Nashville to pursue, to not go to med school and only do country singing, the jobs I got were only jingles, but not singing as a grown-up. I haven't been paid to sing like a grown-up, really, just as a kid. So I had all these kid jingles, and I did a lot of theater growing up and theater in Nashville, and somebody saw me and put me in a TV show for Jim Varney as a 12-year-old boy. Then I was in SAG from this Jim Varney Saturday morning TV show playing a 12-year-old boy clown. Someone heard me and said, you should do cartoons, and I'm like, I don't even know what that is. What is voiceover? I thought Fred Flintstone talked for Fred Flintstone. I didn't really put two and two together. So I moved back to Los Angeles. Casting director loved my voice and walked me into a big agency. And I was booking 2 weeks later. And that was decades ago. And I've just kept doing it.
Wow. That is so cool. How did the conversation go? Maybe with your parents or other loved ones? Where you're like, I know I was going to be a doctor, but now I really want to be like Fred Flintstone.
Well, there was a lot of transitions in there. It was like, Dad, I'm sorry. I don't really want to go to medical school. I'm going to take a break and go to Nashville and be a country singer. And he was like, well, okay. So they let me go. Well, they couldn't stop me. Then I needed to come home, and Daddy came and got me and brought me back to Los Angeles. I got my real estate license for a while. And oh, that was before I went to Nashville. Sorry. Then I came home and then I was working. I mean, he was pleased that I was able to make a living talking like a baby. I don't think any of us really believed that it was going to be the way I made a living and that it would be this long and that it would be my primary, you know, job. I had no idea. I teach a lot now. I wrote a book. I do conferences, seminars, conventions, and I see people who know what they want to do from the get-go, either because they're in college in theater or film or because they've known from childhood that they want to do voiceover. And I kind of try to help people find the most efficient, pragmatic, and cost-effective way of doing that. But it's become such a big thing, Gabe. I mean, it's hard to get in now. I'm lucky that at least I know how it works and I have a bit of a reputation and a good agent. But it's tough. It's a tough biz.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems to be that way with a lot of things. Now, one thing I'm curious about, I've talked to a lot of creative people on my own podcast and doing, you know, different interviews. And a lot of people in the creative space, they feel kind of hesitant to talk about these dreams or these passions, these goals, these jobs that they want to do until they start cashing checks. And then all of a sudden, it gets a little bit more real when you get that, you know, $20,000 deal or board game or movie, or in your case, like a voice acting job. Was it kind of like that where you were maybe a little bit hesitant to talk to people? Like when someone said, hey, what do you do for a living? That you were a little hesitant before you actually started voicing some of these really well-known characters?
No, I wasn't hesitant, but I want to clarify that very few of us rank and file voice actors work for over scale. Scale is the SAG rate that's set. And I'm just like your regular Joe. I have a job. I work for the regular amount. I just work really hard and a lot. And there's something in the Screen Actors Guild called residuals that keeps you afloat during the dry times. And if you get a good show, then sometimes the pay is a little better. But for the most part, voiceover is not, you know, this glamorous on-camera celebrity life that you see in the magazines, on the news. It's a grind. I get up in the morning. I do my, you know, house stuff, kid stuff, dog stuff. I'm in front of my microphone recording, auditioning all day, coaching all day. And if I get a job, you know, I might work two or three jobs a week. But it's not these huge, huge checks. Some celebrities who are now in voiceover or want to do voiceover, they command the big dollars. And you'll notice, like in animated films, they usually have the principal roles, but they're not voice actors. They're not like the regular rank and file grind like I am. Like I'll go in and be able to do a lot of voices. Like in F is for Family, I'm seven of the characters, not one.
Gotcha. It's so interesting to kind of get a behind the scenes look in and how this part of the industry works. Have you found it to be maybe a bit of a benefit that you're not like the on-screen people that get accosted constantly by the paparazzi and you can't go to a restaurant and have dinner with your family? Has that been kind of a nice perk of the voice acting job?
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you how nice it is to be able to go out and not be recognized. I mean, until I open my mouth and talk, then they're like, you have a cute voice. And I'll be like, yeah, thanks.
thanks.
I was paying for some dog food at the pet store the other day, and I handed her my credit card, and she looked at it, and then she looked up at me, then she looked down, and then she looked up at me, and she kind of gasped a little bit because she recognized my name. I was kind of flattered by that.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And I'm sure there's so many moments where you can inject one of your more famous voices and can have some fun. I remember when I was in high school, I had a good friend who was really good at impersonations, and he could impersonate the assistant principal, I mean, just perfectly. Like, you wouldn't know it wasn't him. And so he would say all these inappropriate things in the hallway as the voice of the assistant principal. And people would just turn around in shock and horror and, like, look to see, oh, it's you. So do you have fun with your voices sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah. Like, if I'm in a, back before pandemic when we went to the movies, you know, that dark moment right before the movie starts and they tell you not to use your cell phone and then it goes quiet for maybe 1 second. And in that 1 second, sometimes I'll just cry like a baby. You know, I'll just be like, and then I'll stop and people will turn and try and look. Or I'll do it like in the supermarket. If I'm in an aisle by myself, I'll cry like a baby really, really loud and then stop. And people will like peek down the aisle and be like, these impatient people who have never had kids, what are those kids crying about? Shut that kid up. I'll do it on airplanes just for fun.
That's awesome. So tell me about getting into character. You've played so many different characters over the years. What do you do? What's your process for kind of getting into the mode of, okay, today I'm going to be Jimmy Neutron. Today I'm going to be this other character. What's that like?
Well, the thing about voice acting, Gabe, is that it's not like an on-camera gig where the actor will be like, just, you know, give me a moment. Hold on, I've got to get there. Voiceover isn't like that. You got to get there immediately and sometimes switch between characters and be able to be in that character and carry that character through a range of emotions and still stay in that character. So getting into that character is a combination of, I put this in my book, it's like one of the ways is channeling, which your friend did when he impersonated the principal. He channeled him. Then there's technical ways, you know, what portion of your voice does it live in? Is it down here? Is it up here? Is it here? Is it up here? Is it breathy? Is there an accent associated with it or something like that? Is there a sideways lisp? So all these little layers create that character and you can create them technically and then you live in it. But getting into the character voice-wise has to be something that the successful voice actor can do immediately. Like sometimes when I have so many characters, the director will ask me, "Debbie, you want to get in one character and go all the way through and do all your lines, jump from line to line?" And that's what I'll do because it's easier than having to talk to yourself in different characters. Although I have, but I'll let the editor do that.
Gotcha.
So it's a bit different than on camera, including, you know, say in a video game. Okay, now your dog just died, so this line is in tears. Oh, and now you're flying kites, so now you're happy. So you can't transition fully emotionally, but the mic has to believe you are. So there's voiceover tricks like, I don't know, you'll hear me drinking some water to wet my mouth so that I can... See, I'm not really crying. I'm kind of sucking on water, and it makes it sound like tears. So there's VO tricks.
Gotcha. I am so impressed by voice actors and their ability to switch, kind of what you just did, where you went through like four or five different voices and accents, like back to back to back. So tell me about like your practice. Like, is this something where you just are constantly practicing or maybe did in over the course of time where you're just constantly practicing these different voices and trying to get them right? And tell me, like, what's that like?
Well, it has been a while, I'll tell you. I don't know. I do voice workouts, like when I sing or when I'm in the car, I work out my voice, do warm-ups. When I find a character or if I see an audition and I see the picture of it, then I'll kind of create a voice for that character and a personality for it. And then I forget it unless I book that character. Then I got to fall into it a little more and like Draculaura for Monster High. She was my Russian accent mixed with my little girl mixed with my fast talker. So she is Russian and she talks very, very fast. And she has like 1600 pairs of shoes. And no, they wanted her higher. She was kind of squeaky helium like that. And so in that placement, I became more familiar with her. Real tough question to answer, but I guess I make up the characters I go, and if I book it, then I live in it.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I heard Mark Hamill talking about his voice acting work with the Joker, and he would just practice constantly, like in the car, driving different places. He would just like get his face into certain positions and talking like the Joker and probably freaking out the other people that were in traffic there in Los Angeles. And so do you find that you can kind of really have a lot of fun with a character, especially one that maybe you get to portray for a long period of time where you can start exploring maybe different ways for that character to say things or interact?
Yeah, definitely it helps if you have an ongoing character like a Jimmy Neutron where the writers get to know the character and you get to know your character. And then over time, it's like a symbiotic where you work together in this thing. The writers see, oh, she does that really well as Jimmy Neutron. Let's put that in there, you know, maybe more God of Lusts or more expressions to puke and Pluto. There was things they really liked. Like I did this character for cartoon that Howie Mandel did called Bobby's World a really long time ago. That character, the director wanted nothing. They're like, Debbie, give me less. So I did this character named Jackie, who was very wise, but she was a voice of reason. And if I tried to emote too much, then they'd pull me back.
I remember Bobby's World. That was such a great show.
Yeah. And when it's in a show and it goes on for many, many episodes, yeah, the character does develop more fun things and the writers write fun things that kind of springboard off what you've done. Like Homer Simpson, when he auditioned for that part, he went, "Boy, that wasn't in the script, his dog." But he did that and it became part of him.
Yeah, that's so cool. All right, let's switch gears a little bit and let's talk about the Night Crew. You play Mother, the ship's computer that you have to call by dialing 9 on a rotary phone, which I love. I love the humor in this show. I've really enjoyed listening to it and talking to Peter about it. Peter's been a good friend of mine for a while. So let me just ask you about that. How in the world did Peter get you on the show? Because I'm looking at Peter and what he's done so far, and he's great and he's funny, but then I'm looking at your just long list of credits. And so, like, did he have some blackmail? Like, just blink twice if something's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, how did that happen where you were able to, where he was able to land you as a role in this show?
Well, again, I'm a rank and file voice actor. I audition. If I get the job, I do the job. It's not like I pick and choose. I'm not like some bigwig celebrity that I, you know, decide if I'm going to do it or not. It was a nice union gig, and I auditioned for it, and they booked me on it, and I said, okay, I'll do it. And then when we recorded, it was like, oh, this is pretty funny. And then Peter turned out to be so very clever and optimistic and sunny and fun and hilarious. And that's how it goes with some shows. You land the job, and then these positive things spin from it. So sometimes you book a show and it's not great, but it's not like I said, oh, Peter hasn't done enough, I won't work for him. It's never that, Gabe. It's never that.
Awesome. It's so good to hear. And it's so great for me to kind of get a picture as a layman and kind of into this industry. And so help me understand, let's say I want to do a show and I need some voice actors. Is there like a website I go and I upload the job posting and then people submit their audition kind of things for it? How does it work?
Well, for someone in, I don't want to say my caliber, but like the legitimate voice actor who does regular voice actors' jobs, the producer will sign on with Screen Actors Guild, the SAG-AFTRA, and he'll submit his auditions to, it's this like service that submits auditions to agents, and the agent sees those auditions and says, oh, I want to submit 5 of my actors, or they'll say, submit your top 5 actors. And the agent will say, okay, A, B, C, and D, here's the audition. I'll send it in after you audition. The auditions don't come to me from the producer. The auditions come to me from my agent. I get in my booth and audition, send it back to my agent. My agent submits it for me. If it books, then the producer calls that agent and says, yes, I like your choice. I want to hire Debbie. They'll call me and say, okay, Debbie, they want to hire you, and these are the terms. And then they'll do whatever negotiations they need to do, which really aren't very many because it's a SAG union rate. And I'm not necessarily overscale, not like a on-camera agent, like a celebrity, where they will say, oh, they're not going to work for $1,000. They work for $100,000. Yeah, that's not me.
Gotcha. Okay, so cool. And so then tell me about the process of the actual voice work. Do they just send you the script and you've got notes as far as, okay, this needs to be while you're crying or whatever, or are they right there, maybe not during COVID times, but in a normal situation, are y'all in the room together and they're kind of going back and forth? Tell me the process of actually getting the voice recorded.
Let's talk about non-COVID times then. You go into the studio and there's they've sent you a script ahead of time to read. And then when you get there, they'll usually give you a paper copy because there's so many notes. If there's just a few lines, then they'll just have a monitor and you'll see your script digitally. You'll be on your side of the glass. They'll be on their side of the glass. The producers and the engineers will all be on the other side of the glass and you'll be in front of your microphone. And if you're in group, like in Jimmy Neutron, we record it all together. In Curious George, we record all together. For features, we record separate, and then they direct you, and they'll say, give me line 1 and ABC. That means give me line 1 3 different ways. So, you know, if it's like, what are you kidding me? And it's an old lady, it'll be, what are you kidding me? What are you kidding me? What are you kidding me? So that's 3 different ways of reading that same line. And they'll say, okay, I like that B take. Then we'll go on to line 2, and I'll give them 3 takes, and they'll choose their choice, and it goes like that for the whole script. And then you're done and you go home and that's the end of your job. Then they take it from there, and a year later they've got a finished product.
Very cool. Okay, so tell me about Mother. So she's this character that is loving but maybe a tad bit overbearing.
It's a really fun character. She's not too far away from me. She's loving and very mothery, and she just don't know, she pipes in sometimes at inappropriate times.
Yeah, and I love that she wants to make sure that everybody is okay and that everyone is regular and that if you need a blanket, I'll bring it to you. Like, the character is so well done. But then as this computer, and so you get this really fun, you know, intersection of kind of the human mom, but also it's very much computer mom. And so, yeah, I've really enjoyed listening to the pilot, and I'm excited to see where the character goes from here.
Yeah. I think people are really going to enjoy it. And it's because it's a podcast as opposed to an animated show, we'll get to see the fruits of our labors much quicker, because if it's, you know, fully animated, then they're going to send it out and, you know, they storyboard it and then they color it and then there's ADR, and it's just a much longer process.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you about just characters in general. When you have an idea for one, is there a process you go through of maybe like listening to a certain accent a bunch and different people saying it or other characters that have been done before and you're trying to get a gauge for how to do it? Do you have a process of going through any other characters or watching movies or watching shows trying to figure out like the perfect angle to take a certain character's voice?
Preparing for the auditions can sometimes be that way. They will send you the character breakdown and the tone of the character, and that tone, they'll send you maybe some YouTube links or say, oh, it's in the vein of this character. It's sort of the pacing of an Amy Poehler, but the snarkiness of, you know, another actor. So you'll watch the YouTube videos or interviews on these particular celebrities or characters. And if they're saying that's the pacing, okay, that's how fast I need to talk. If they'll say that's the tone, then I'll say, okay, that tone, it feels a little bit like this. It's overbearing or it's snarky. And that's different than impressions. They're not looking for a voice match. They're looking for a tone of that character. Or if they send you a video game and they'll say, this video game is sort of like, they'll name a video game. And so I'll watch a few outtakes of that video game to figure out how that video game feels and what's that tone, what's that mood. Is it high energy and cheeseball and caricature-y, or is it more somber, or is it more Game of Thrones-y, or is it... That's how I kind of find the voice for that audition. If they don't say anything, then I'll, you know, make up my own. I'll go, oh, that character has... I did one yesterday. She looked like a... She was a teenager. She was kind of... Had the spider head, and she was a raunchy 20-year-old brat who cursed a lot. And so I thought, well, she's kind of like Bridget from F is for Family, but she doesn't have any speech impediments. And so I toyed with a couple different placements and voices until I landed on one that I thought was funny. And that's the one I did for the audition.
Gotcha. Do you have any favorite characters that you've done over the years?
You know, the favorite in the sense that I've made more money with those than anyone else and being able to work with that character more than any other character. I like them all, Gabe. I enjoy what I do. I think because I did Monster High for so long, Dracula was fun for me because I knew her. Same with Jimmy Neutron. I did him for so long that, gosh, he's part of me. And that's super fun to be able to identify with that. I have a show on Adult Swim right now called Tigtone, T-I-G-T-O-N-E, that's just so out there. It's like Monty Python meets Game of Thrones. And I play this purple creature named Happy, who can regenerate and his arms come off. And then he grows new ones. And he's so funny. I love the whole show. He's a favorite of mine. Plus, he's purple. It depends how long I get to inhabit them and, you know, how much attention I get. Because I am an actor. I do live for applause and attention. I do like all that. I like everybody saying, ooh, ee-ah, look, it's you and you did this. Of course I love that. So that makes characters more fun for me, too.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you mentioned that you now teach a good bit. What is your advice to new people wanting to get into voice acting? What do you tell them to encourage them or to warn them or anything along those lines?
Get out. No, I say, read my book. Make sure there's nothing else you'd rather do, because it's super competitive and hard to get into. And I think, like anything, it looks easier from the outside before you dive in. Somebody was asking me the other day if I thought they could get into house swapping. You know, I'll go buy some houses and then I'll swap them and I'll rent them out for a while. And I'm like, some details, maybe you're skipping the details. Same with voiceover. If people want to get into it, I'd say read my book, do a lot of research. It's a lot of training, and these days it has, what do you call it when in Star Trek and they push the button and it goes in time speed?
Oh, like warp speed?
Yeah, it's warp speed into really high tech. Like you need to have a home booth. Well, that costs a little money. You need to record from home from your auditions, and your auditions have to sound as good as my auditions. So your mic better be as good. You better know how to work your software. What software are you going to get? You have to edit it yourself, direct yourself. Then you have to meet all the casting directors that you're going to have your audition submitted to. You have to make a demo. What kind of voiceover do you want to be in? Promos, animation, commercial, anime, dubbing, looping. There's radio. There's just so much. There's a lot to learn. But I'd say start with some beginning classes and to read my book, which is available on Amazon. It's called VoiceOver 101, How to Succeed as a Voice Actor. But also on my website, I do a couple intro videos. There's a lot of stuff out there that people can watch for free and learn about VO for free. And it's not just about talking funny. It's an acting job. It's a full-on acting job. It's not just, oh, I can imitate Jimmy Neutron and sound just like him. Well, that's great, but I'm not dead yet, and they're not looking to recast me. And if they are, they're looking for a voice actor who has their home studio. I'm not wishing my own demise. I'm just saying it's more than just being able to talk funny or sound like someone. It is a full-time job.
Right. I've talked to so many people in creative spaces, and it's the same kind of thing no matter who I talk to and what they're doing, writing, movie making, whatever. There is no dream job unless you're asleep, and every job is a job, and every industry is an industry, and there's business things, and there are pros and cons and all of those things to take into account. And so, yeah, that's really, really good advice. Other than kind of the software and the technology stuff, how have you seen, or what have you seen change over the years, more so in the voice acting? Obviously, you know, the mics have gotten better and things like that, but just from the people that have come and gone and the styles and whatnot, what have you seen change?
A couple things on the not great for me side, but great for other people side. The fact that animated films will put on-camera celebrities as their principal roles for money-making purposes means those roles are not available to us regular voiceover artists. You won't really hear any of us rank-and-file voice artists as stars in an animated film, ever, unless it's an indie. And they'll say, no, we want Debbie, for sure. But that has made it so that there's less of that portion of the business available to us. But there are the things that I do that a lot of the on-camera actors don't do, which is, you know, the special voices, the dogs, the cats, the babies, the cursing children. And then there's another aspect of it, which I'll just touch on, which is it's a great thing. The move towards casting in ethnic diversities means there are, again, less roles available for me that we voice actors used to be able to do. Because if the part comes and it's, you know, an Asian part or a Latina part, then they cast those ethnicities for it, which really helps in bringing a lot of diversity to the cast. But it also, on my end, it reduces the number of jobs that in the past I've done. It's a smaller fishbowl now for me. And other things that have changed are that there's so much more streaming content. It's a different financial market now for voice actors because everything's not the same pay anymore because it's not network or cable. It's network, cable, streaming, new media, YouTube. There's so many different platforms that things air on that there's so many different ways of being paid. So I do it all, but I work harder, longer, for less. But luckily, I love what I do so much that working for me is just a pleasure. I just love it all. But it's changed so much in that aspect. It's possible for people to create their own projects and put themselves in it. And I've seen people do it, and it's a lot of work. But that's certainly one way in.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about how, like, Amazon Prime and Netflix, there's so many new ways for people to watch shows that need voice acting. I was going to ask you about how that has affected the industry. And it sounds like it's maybe created more opportunities, but maybe now you need more opportunities just to kind of make a living.
Yeah, it's definitely a numbers game. Sometimes I'll do up to 50 auditions in a week, and it takes a lot of time. I record it, I edit it, and I send it, but it's not as easy as it sounds. I have to read the script and create the character and decide on it and do one or two takes and then edit them, and that's one audition. But wait, I've got five auditions that day. So it's time consuming, but it's really fun. and I'm good at it and I like it. And that's what makes it a happy job for me. I really enjoy what I do. I always have.
Yeah. And that's also, I guess, the way to sustain this type of job is to enjoy it and have a passion for it. Mm-hmm. So even in the ups and downs, that you're still enjoying the work, even if it changes and you know, goes in different directions. But Abby, this has been excellent. Do you have anything else you want to say or talk about with your experience as far as the night crew or playing as the role of mother or anything like that?
I hope everybody watches or listens to Night Crew and appreciates for the humor that Peter has written into it. He was really, really great to work for, and he's a good director. It's unique. I don't come across a lot of projects that are so different that you just, your ears perk up and you want to brag about it. But it's a super funny idea. I mean, it's not the day crew of the spaceship. It's the night crew. And they do things at night that people in the day never see or do. It's sort of like the, you know, in Downton Abbey, where you don't really get to see the day-to-day of everybody. You see the behind the scenes, the cooks in the kitchen. It's interesting, and I'm impressed by Peter's creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And I'm really looking forward to lots and lots of episodes coming, hopefully, in the near future. Well, Debbie, this has been excellent. Where can people find you online?
At DebbieDerryberry.com, D-E-B-I, that's four letters, D-E-B-I-D-E-R-R-Y-B-E-R-R-Y.com. Or just, you know, Google me and Jimmy Neutron, you'll see how to spell it. You can see my videos on VoiceOver and see my book there. And we didn't touch on my children's music and my country music, but, you know, if you're on Spotify or Pandora and you have a little kid, put in Debbie Derryberry's music, and there's so much great preschool kids music in there. I just have fun every day, and I love what I do. And neuter your pets, get vaccinated, adopt dogs instead of getting purebreds. Those are the three things I want to say.
Awesome. Well, Debbie, I really appreciate your time. Really appreciate you joining me here on the Night Crew Duty Log. Good luck with all the mini voice acting things you're working on and everything else you got going on right now.
Thanks, Gabe. Good luck to you. And thanks for promoting our fun little podcast show.
That was the amazing Debbie Derryberry. All the things she talked about are available in the description. That was the amazing Debbie Derryberry. There are links to everything she talked about in the description. Next time, we'll be interviewing Riley Quinn Scott, who plays the part of Samantha Sharp. And of course, don't forget to check out our Kickstarter. You can find a link in the description. Talk to you next time.